Hi, and welcome to Hyperfixations, the podcast where we invite various interesting people on to talk about their niche area of interest so they could just talk forever about. Here are your hosts. I'm Ali.
And I'm Nigel.
And today we have Floyd. Floyd, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Hex, how are you? I'm excited to be here.
I'm good, thanks. And
doing good,
what
yeah.
What are you here to talk to us about?
I'm here to talk about Animorphs, which was a YA series published in the late 90s, early 2000s, but more specifically about the books themselves, which is the part that I find really fascinating, although I could absolutely fill up an entire hour just talking about various plot points. I think that my specific hyperfixation is around the actual physical printed books.
Nice.
Ah, excellent. So, Animorphs, why have you brought it for today's episode? How did you first get into Animorphs?
Like most people of a certain age, and by that I mean, I think mainly people in their, you know, mid to late 30s, I discovered Animorphs via the Scholastic Book Fair, the Scholastic book catalog that was...
institution.
Yeah, big Scholastic pushed Animorphs on all of us. So they started to publish Animorphs in 1996, which is when I was in elementary school at some point. So they came out in the Scholastic Book Fair flyer. The covers, if you remember the covers, with kids, you know, slowly turning into animal, obviously a big attention grabber. So I ordered, I think I actually maybe started with number 4 and then had to go back. But I started reading them and just was immediately hooked. And I know that that's the story for a lot of Animorphs fans. It's a YA series and it starts off very light and fluffy. But it very quickly gets dark and includes some very adult themes around, you know, the ethics and morality of fighting a battle, PTSD, child soldiers. Like, there's a lot going on in these books and a lot of themes that really resonated with of a certain age. You know, the idea is you can't trust, you don't know which adults you can, you've got a big secret, only you can, you know, fight unseen evil. So there's certainly a lot there that resonates with kids, but the books...
Wait, you're telling me there's child soldiers in this book series?
Not only child soldiers, but it gets so dark. Like, it centers on 5 human teenagers. They're later joined by an alien teenager. And then they have to commit atrocities, literal war crimes. At the end of the book, one of the characters is put on trial for war crimes. It's very, very grim.
Okay.
It's really good.
But now, here's the thing. In terms of, like, young and middle grade books which are pushed on people by institutions like the Scholastic Book Fair, it's strange that there's 2 series which were formative in a lot of people's sort of childhoods which feature child soldiers as a thing. Because if we just cast our minds back to the halcyon days of learning what the fuck warrior cats were...
I was really just thinking.
That also has child soldiers and war crimes.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of see how it becomes a popular theme with kids. Like, it gives the young protagonists real power. Or they are kind of, all the action is kind of hidden on what they're doing. And I think that at that younger age, you don't really understand, you know, the horrors of war, but the scale is large. The scale of the battle and of the conflict is large. And I think that really appeals to younger readers who maybe are, you know, searching for their own sense of identity or purpose. You know, whether or not that's a great way to find yourself or find your own power as a child is certainly up for debate, but definitely some themes that resonate with younger audiences.
Yeah. Why that is, because, like, obviously there's long been this tradition of you know, like, children's literature being sort of darker and presenting themes that you're meant to, like, challenge children and expose them to these ideas, you know, themes of like mortality and death and things like Bridge to Terabithia. But at the same time, a lot of what seems to go on in these books, at least from what guests have come on and told us, both you and Mary Kate, is like you sort of casually dropped in, oh, there's five human teenagers who first of all can turn into animals, and then you just dropped in like it was completely nothing, like this was normal, that they're joined by an alien later on.
The ideal friend group ratio is five teenagers who can.
Exactly. You can't have more than that. Do add more to their group as they go on, but it gets. There are a lot of children's books that have, or young adult books that have really mature themes. I think that if adults had read Animorphs at the time, like they would have gotten them canceled somehow, because in the very first book, you meet this.
I'm sorry, what a way to start off a sentence if adults had read Animorphs.
You know, like I'm pretty sure my parents
also pointed out that five people who can turn into animals who are joined by an alien is basically the plot of JoJo's Bizarre Adventures, and I hate
that. Oh my gosh.
amazing.
That's an interesting parallel. Yeah, I think there are some really, really particularly dark moments in these books. I mean, in the first book, you get introduced to this kind of like heroic alien who is immediately eaten alive in front of the kids by this grotesque evil alien. One of the kids kills a cop in the first book. Animorphs is firmly ACAB, firmly pro trans. There's a lot of good things about Animorphs and the Animorphs fandom. There's one of the characters basically does a genocide and then has to wrestle with whether good or bad, because he genocided evil aliens that are trying to take over the human race. There's just a ton.
The good genocide, of course.
Right. Yeah. That is why he went on trial for
that's my favorite parallel from the Bible, right alongside the prodigal son, the good genocide, when Jesus killed all of the moneylenders in the temple.
I don't remember that from primary school.
I've become increasingly more controversial in these last few episodes. Like two episodes ago, I challenged Elon Musk to a protracted legal battle for some reason.
Oh wow! Okay.
Good for you. As you should.
Yeah, but so what exactly is the instigating plot of Animorphs? Because you've sort of like put the cart in front of the horse, because you know everyone wants to hear about the good genocide, the good genocide. But how do these people turn into cats and other things? Like, is this an inbuilt ability? Like, what's the backstory to Animorphs?
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent question. So the instigating sort of conflict here is that the teenagers are walking through an abandoned construction site at night. They're taking a shortcut home from the mall. They're all sort of loosely named friend group, although they're not super acquainted with each other. Walking through this abandoned construction site, they witness an alien's ship crash landing, which obviously, you know, if you're a teenager in the 90s, that's going to be something that catches your attention. So out of this UFO comes this alien prince, an Andalite. And this is an alien race that has mastered the ability to morph. It's a technological sort of ability. It's science-based. The science obviously is never really fully explained, but it's not something that they're born with. It's a technology that they develop. So he crash lands. He tells the kids, hey, there is an evil race of alien brain slug called the Yerks. They love slugs. They crawl in through your ear, wrap around your brain, and then they take over your body. So you don't know who's under the control. It could be your teacher. It could be your mom. But their goal is to basically take over the galaxy. And they've set their sights on Earth because humans have really capable host bodies. And he's trying to fight them, but it's just not going very well. No one on Earth knows about this that isn't already controlled by the evil brain slugs. So he needs them to fight. So he gives them this power to morph. He transfers it to them through something called the Escafil device. That's a whole other thing that gets later on. But they all get this power to morph, so they can have animal DNA. Any animal they can touch, and turn into that animal for 2 hours and hours at a time. And that's really, he doesn't give them a lot more context than that. The big bad guy shows up. He also has the power to morph. He turns into some crazy, like, swamp creature with a bunch of teeth, eats the alien prince that gave them the power to morph, and they run off scared, and that's kind of it for how the story gets started. And then they have to figure out how they're going to fight that battle from there, even if they do want to fight the battle, which they do, because it goes on for another 63 books after that.
63 books?
I was about to ask, is that hyperbole, or is it, like, literally, on God, 63 books?
On God, it is 63 books, and that's really what I want to dive into. So there are four books in
the
main. I
love the fact that you thought that was hyperbole, because it's the exact type of hyperbole I like, where you say something outlandish but specific, like where I talk to the tall person and say, "Oh, he was approximately the size of the Chrysler Building."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or it's not too outlandish, like, you know, it's plausible, like the case of 63 books.
Yeah, well, literally. I mean, how many books does Warrior Cats have? Like, over 100, right? So it's definitely within the realms of feasibility.
Oh, definitely. I mean, yeah. The impressive thing is these all came out between 96 and 2001. So they were churning these things out.
Oh my god. So how many were they doing a year? Like fucking 15 of them a year. Like, one a month, nearly. What the fuck?
Basically, yeah. And after, I think somewhere around the mid-20s, they started contracting ghostwriters, and then the original authors came back for the kind of the final arc of the story. And sometimes you can tell that it was ghostwritten, but there were literally 64 books. So we've got 54 books in the main series. And then there are four Megamorphs books, so the main series are told from the rotating perspectives of the main characters. one to four book. Megamorph, yes, those are longer books. They fit within the chronology of the main series. You kind of read them as a standalone, and they're told, each chapter is told from the perspective of a different character. And then there are four Chronicles books, which go more into the backstory of some of the alien characters. And then there were two Alternamorphs books, which were choose-your-own-adventure-style non-canon books. And they were not great.
I'll be straight up with you, Chief. Those were not good.
They were not good. Yeah.
They were not amazing. Like,
No.
Also, currently making a meme.
Oh, Animorphs memes? You're going to Twitter with those. There's a huge audience for Animorphs memes. Yeah.
This will be episode specific, but also related to. Just because as long as I bring it up audibly on the episode, then it makes sense. Then when we post this thing out of context.
Yeah, you know, you gotta set the stage for the meme. Well,
right. So, is the main series divided up into different sub-series, or is it all like one continuing book, one continuing story, with no sort of like subplots and things like that over the space of 50 whatever books?
Yeah, it's in kind of continuous cohesivity. There are a couple of main kind of story arcs that are viewed across books. For example, in books 20, 21, and 22, they briefly experiment with adding a sixth Animorph to the team. but he doesn't work out, so they trap him in a rat body and banish him to an island where he screams for the rest of his life. It's extremely dark. Extremely dark.
I love I have no mouth and I must scream.
I have a rat mouth and I must scream.
Yeah. I love when my friends trap me in a rat body and I have a rat mouth for eternity and I must scream.
It's just really
Harlan Ellison's most famous short story.
Naturally.
And imagine these kids were 13, 14, 14 when the series started, so they're probably 14 or 15 during this arc, and they have to decide, am I going to trap this guy as a rat for the rest of his life, or am I just going to murder him? It's a tough decision to make.
The tender ages of 14 and 15, where you can already conceive of fates worse than death.
Yeah, sure. Typical part of, like, everyone's adolescence.
Yeah, sometimes it feels that way, but these were some real problems these kids were dealing with. So that's kind of the summary of the books. And I know a lot of folks who, they complete Morph's collection. Not all of these are easy, particularly when you get up above book four. Some of them are very defined because I think they only did one print run above a certain number of books. Number 51 in particular is very difficult to find. And it'll sell on eBay for well over $100 often. Not to brag, I have two copies of it.
Why?
In case one gets ruined, then I'll have a backup.
Backup Animorph. Animorph for the road.
Exactly, yeah. A reading copy and a preserving copy.
This one is my copy of Animorphs, and this one is God's.
Amazing.
No deity or non-deity deity will have fingers on my extra copy of 51. So that's kind of the standard North American print. If someone says I've completed my Animorphs collection, what they're talking about is generally they have collected all 64 of these books. Now, my collection is a bit different. So I track this in a spreadsheet. Animorphs, of course, was very, well, maybe not of course, I take this for granted, maybe not everyone does, but was very popular in the late 90s, early 2000s among young adult readers. So it was published in a number of languages, in a number of countries. There were different variations of some in terms of the cover elements. For example, they printed the first seven books in North America. The Animorphs logo had a white ground. Then after that, they went back and reprinted them with the logo having a metallic background, and then they printed the rest of them also with that metallic background. So I'm tracking 778 different Animorphs books, variations of the books, in my spreadsheet. That's not all of them. Those are the ones that I would like to own. There are some other ones that didn't quite make the cut. For example, books that were published in Australia, they're basically identical to the North American prints, except for the URL and the currency unit or the currency on the book. So those ones I haven't included. That would crank it up to 850 different books. Maybe one to get bored.
So just ones which are appreciably different.
Appreciably different. Yeah, exactly. And I own 239 of them, so I'm about 30% there, and that's taken.
You
me...
own. So hold on. Let me just spell this out for the listeners. All right, you own what? 239 books out of a 64 book series.
Yes. Yes. Right. I own more. I have some duplicates, but I have 239 unique Animorphs books.
Just 239 discrete Animorph books.
Yes. 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 Exactly. Right.
Okay, so now that begs the question then, how many total do you have including duplicates? Is this tracked in your spreadsheet?
Not tracked in my spreadsheet. I would estimate, I'm careful with, if I was going to purchase one by accident, it would be something very common, and I know that I own all of the really common versions of them that are available in North America, so I've got a very particular spreadsheet, and it doesn't happen often. I probably have about a dozen duplicates that I have accumulated over the years. So not
okay.
Certainly, probably fewer than 250, or right around 250.
Right.
That is surprising, I guess, just because, like, in terms of the collector's market over, like, things which have a lot of appreciable differences, I'm thinking things like Pokemon cards or coins or things like that. You know, like, you see those videos of people opening rolls of coins on TikTok, and, like, a lot of them will be the same. So, obviously, you're, obviously, it's very difficult to find some of these, like you said, but by that token, then you also seem to be very good at, like, knowing which ones are ones you already have, and like to be able to tell those differences.
Yeah, well, there are three versions of the books that were kind of like my holy trinity of the ones that I wanted to acquire. And those were the five books were printed in Japan with hand drawn editions and special covers in Japanese, of course. The first 13 books were re-released in Vietnam in 2018 and 2019, again with hand-drawn covers that are really cool. And in 2011, there was a run of the first six books that was released in Brazil with really unique covers that are nothing like any of the other covers that were released globally. So I own the full set of the Japanese books and of the Brazilian books. And the Brazilian ones were probably my most convoluted acquisition. Because I don't know if anyone's ever tried to buy something from Brazil, but to purchase anything in Brazil or from Brazil, you need a tax number, kind of like your social security number, ID number, or social number. But you can't get a bank account. You can't even buy a plane ticket from a Brazilian airline without one of these numbers. So it was impossible to buy it without going through some kind of service. And I was actually going to go to the Brazilian consulate in my hometown and get one of these numbers just so I could buy them. And then COVID hit and they closed the consulate except for emergencies. And I don't think that they would consider getting Animorphs books in emergency. I didn't ask, but thought it was a safe assumption. So I ended up getting them from a guy named Fabio, who lives in Brazil, who was an acquaintance of the wife of a guy that I went to high school with, and then she, the wife of the friend Fabio, ended up going to the same conference in Boston. So he purchased Brazil. He brought them to Boston. She took them back to my hometown, which is about an hour from here, or 2 hours from here. My brother picked them up and then gave them to my mother, who was visiting him. She brought them back to me, and so in this very roundabout way, I got these books all the way from Brazil. So that was probably my most difficult acquisition of all of them.
Jesus Christ, human trafficking seems easier.
Hunting Animorphs books is not for the faint of heart.
It's really not, and I really want the 13 Vietnamese re-release from 2018. So I have a lead on my mother discovered this is weird. This is getting too into family stuff, but my mom was adopted and has met some of her biological siblings. One of them, who she recently became connected with, has, I think, family or acquaintances in Vietnam. So I am working that connection, trying to get the Vietnamese books to me somehow, because they are very difficult to find. And I've sent emails to Vietnamese booksellers being like, please help me. They don't like to respond, at least not the ones I reached out to. So I'm really trying to get those ones. And then I'll feel pretty happy about my specific cover collection. Yeah.
To just run back to something, run us through exactly how you managed to set up this connection to Fabio. Like how did you go about setting that up in place? You know, not even worrying about the weird conga line that it took to illegally smuggle these Animorph books into the United States. Like, how did you set up that in the first place?
Well, most of the good things I have in life and most of the Animorphs conversations all originate on Twitter. So I tweeted, and I I don't want to brag, but one of the authors of Animorphs does follow me on Twitter.
Brag about that.
Shout out.
The House of Leaves guy liked one of my tweets, and it was all I could talk about for a week.
Dang, that is pretty cool. Yeah, the Animorphs books are credited to K.A. Applegate, Catherine Alice Applegate. She is married to another YA author, Michael Grant. They co-wrote the books.
Yo,
Michael Grant.
The Gone books.
Exactly.
I was obsessed with them, like, when I was 13, I think. Yeah, I was 13 when the last one came out.
Yeah, that is Michael Grant. He does follow me on Twitter. And
very cool.
Catherine does
Okay, hold on. So you know the way that you're trying to use your mom's newfound discovery of her family to leverage books in Vietnam? Can you leverage your connection to Michael Grant on Twitter to get him onto the show, please?
Look, onto the show. I can ask. I can ask. As long as I can tell him that Animorphs is already covered. I don't want him, you know, moving in on my territory. I don't care if he wrote them.
If Michael Grant, author of the Gone books and others, presumably, wants to talk about Animorphs.
I suppose. Who am I to stop him?
Right, but anyway, sorry. So you... So you tweeted about this on Twitter.
I tweeted about this on Twitter, as one does. The who helped me just and to know some guy in Brazil from, I guess it was a professional connection in the agency that she works for. So she DM'd me and let me know that she knew this guy. And I said, okay, would it be weird if you reached out and asked him if he would buy children's books for someone he doesn't know? So apparently it wasn't that weird. It took a full year, to get them. Yeah. One whole year. So.
One whole calendar year.
One whole calendar year, yeah.
It was a battle, in other words.
It was a battle, yeah. So those are the kind of higher profile region-specific covers, but it's translated into, you know, dozens of languages. I've got some of the ones. I have a respectable number of Spanish and French versions. There are like Hebrew, Turkish, Russian, Indonesian, Hungarian that I don't have any of them.
These have been excessively, well, not excessively, but like widely translated.
Widely translated. And let me tell you who got really screwed over by the translation was the Italians. I feel terrible for Italian fans of Animorphs because they got up to book 52 translated, and then they never translated the last two books. They were just like, you don't get to know what happens. Poor teenagers.
Insert clip of Woody going, all right, next episode.
So they never got it, but they did get Alternamorphs 1, which is basically a non-canon choose-your-own-adventure retelling of book 11, which is not the greatest book anyway. So they really got screwed by that. But someone else on Twitter hooked me up with a fan translation of 53 and 54 in Italian. So I do have those, and I'm happy that Italian fans finally got the justice that they deserved.
Do you own a copy of Alternamorphs?
I do. I own Alternamorphs 1 and 2.
They made two of those motherfuckers.
They made two of them, and not one that they published internationally. Okay, didn't get that. I think maybe, let me just refer to the spreadsheet here. No, I don't think the French got them, but only the Canadian French. So Scholastic French did it. Italians got one of them, and they were translated into German, but I think as a combined edition. So you could choose two adventures in one book. Yeah, those ones did not do very well internationally. Yeah.
Mm. Why do you think Animorphs had such a widespread, like, global appeal? Because I understand that I understand a lot of people in, and I hate to say, like, the Western world, but you know what I mean. You know, like, mm-hmm. America and Europe we're reading into this because, like you say, the Scholastic Book Fair is a thing there. So I'm surprised in a good way that there's things like Hebrew translations.
Yeah.
Like Hebrew translations and stuff of these books. I wanted to say in a good way to preface it, not being like, wow, Hebrew gets translations of books. No, it's just like, you don't see a lot of popular literature being translated into languages like Hebrew. Like, I know the first Harry Potter book was translated into like Welsh and Latin. Also, The Hobbit is in Latin. But very few of these things seem to be translated into languages like Hebrew.
This was, you know, it was translated into so many languages, Romanian even, and all of the Nordic languages. And I think there are a lot of themes that I think are kind of have global appeal, and we talked about some of them already, but I think at its core, just the idea of turning into an animal is... Like, as a kid, how often did you look up at the sky and see a bird and think, damn, that would be cool if I could fly like a bird? And that's what these kids were doing. So I think there was definitely universal appeal to that, just the idea of having this power, being able to shapeshift into different animals, gain those kinds of powers. And the books were also, I don't want to call them very international. They did do a little bit of traveling. They up in the Amazon. At one point, one of them ends in Australia by mistake. And yeah, there's certainly some travel. And of course, they end up in outer space a lot of the time. So that's kind of a universal thing as well. And, you know, the idea of space travel, alien wars, shape-shifting. I think that there's a lot of appeal there that kind of transcends language or regionality.
Yeah. Definitely. But was it ever to like coincide with things, you know, happening globally? Or was it just like, we want to do sort of like a globe-trotting fun adventure? You know, like the way that Captain Planet just randomly had an episode set in Northern Ireland during the Troubles, just for some reason.
It never got political in the sense that it tried to tie in to a lot of current events. There was part of that arc with the rat trapped guy that involved them basically infiltrating the equivalent of a G8 summit, and it makes reference to world leaders at the time but doesn't name them, just kind of drops clues. That I think that's the only thing that really ties it to any sort of current event. There are some very, you know, 90s references in there talking about their Walkman and some hilarious descriptions of using the internet. But yeah, it wasn't really something that was, I think, going on at the time.
I think it comes down now to the crucial question of, if you were an animorph, what animal would you morph into?
Well, okay, are we talking transportation? Are we talking espionage, battle? Why am I morphing in this scenario?
Oh, okay. I thought you were listing categories, and I was about to say none of these words mean anything to me. Because, right, so, like, they're not locked into one animal.
No, they never find a limit to how many they acquire. Yeah, they can acquire any animal, and they can store all of them kind of indefinitely.
Okay. I don't know. See, transport seems like a fairly blasé one to do, because it'd be like a bird or a cheetah, because they go fast. Although it'd be interesting if someone said like a pygmy goat for transport, because I like cloven hooves. I like the sound they make on the cobblestones. I don't know. Espionage. Let's go with espionage.
Espionage. In the books, they use cockroaches a lot for espionage, because I guess they're kind of ubiquitous. People don't notice them. They're very hard to kill.
That's how they snuck into the G8 summit. Ayo, political commentary.
They actually morph flies, if you believe that. To get in there. They tried with seagulls, didn't work very well. Espionage. it's a tough one. You need something that has good hearing. Many creatures of that size, not great. If you're doing espionage outside, particularly in a coastal region, which is where I live, the seagull actually works quite well. You never notice the seagull. You can dive down, pretend you're getting a French fry if you want to hear things better. Pretty good eyesight. That's a good one for espionage. If you've got to do indoors, I think probably, the cockroach was a good one, a little bit larger, not a hive mind creature like an ant. That throws some challenges to staying focused on the mission. It's very dependent on context. And you do a lot about animals and their physiology through the lens of how can we use these for battling aliens in the books, which
there's kind of also a didactic element to the books.
And there are still things, there are things that I remember, to this day about animals that I learned in the books that I don't know, probably come in useful when I'm yelling answers at Jeopardy or something like that.
Jeopardy. What about you, Allie?
For SC, I would say seagull, because that makes sense, but, like, I feel like where I am, like, when people see a seagull, they tend to, like, leave, avoid it, like, so it doesn't steal your lunch, so... I like the idea of cockroach. Also, I just think in general, I think it would be really cool to be a cat. Like, I just think that would be fun, just being a cat.
A cat's a good one, and they actually do use a cat for espionage in book number 2, so pretty early in the series, yeah.
Sure. What about you, Nigel?
Okay, I have some questions. In this universe, how common is anamorphing as knowledge? Like, is this a thing that, like, a lot of people know? Or even the villains, like, do the villains know, the people who are trying to stop us can turn into animals, and so we need to be wary of animals?
So humans don't know about it at all, and it's not really known about by anyone outside of the Animorphs until very late in the series, when the battle, comes out of the underground, and it's an all-out turf war on Earth. So it is widely known across all of the alien species that are involved in the story that the Andalites, well, they're kind of the good guy aliens. It turns out they're not really. It's a gray zone. You'll have to read the books. But they're the only ones with the morphing technology, and it's coveted by the evil Yurks, the bugs. So they don't have the ability to morph, but they have one Andalite host. So one Yurk has managed to take control of an Andalite body. It's the only Andalite that has ever been captured by the Yurks, and the only one that is a controller, as they call them, anyone who's controlled by the Yurks. So they do have one guy who can morph, and as the kind of events of the series kick off, they assume that these 5 human teenagers are actually 5 like rogue Andalite bandits who are fighting them on Earth. They don't know that they're humans until much later in the series.
Right, okay, but also they wouldn't naturally presume it's an Andalite if they saw a normal animal, right?
Right, they're aware of, like, the normal animals on Earth. They've integrated Earth society to an extent, and so they become more suspicious of animals over time because they think that they're being attacked on Earth by a group of Andalites who are fighting them. Later they find out it's humans. Yeah, they do start to regard basically any animal with intense suspicion as the series progresses.
Okay, cool, because I'm also imagining that I would be doing espionage on humans, and now all this has conglomerated into me being able to give my answer. What animal would I turn into if I wanted to conduct espionage? Water buffalo. Water buffalo. Like, if you're in an office block and there's a water buffalo there all of a sudden, I'm going up and touching that motherfucker. What's he doing there? I don't have to worry about getting close. People will come to me.
There is a plot point. Yeah. There's a plot point in Animorphs that involves a buffalo, and it's very, very dark.
Irrelevant. Has someone ever brought a dog to a place where you work?
Yes. Yeah.
Nothing gets done. Everyone wants to talk to that motherfucker. Water buffalo, not as common.
Common.
It would be even more chaotic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how much espionaging you'd get done, but it certainly is a tactic that you can employ.
Okay, assuming then, if we want to go for realism, then I would be part of some sort of double act then, where I would be a water buffalo, and then my partner would be a gecko or something like that.
Okay, that makes it legit. I'll tell you the dark plot point, because I think it'll shock and horrify you. At one point, an African Cape buffalo accidentally gets the power to morph by touching the device. Of course, is a buffalo, doesn't understand. He accidentally acquires one of the human controllers and begins to morph him, but doesn't understand what is going on because he's a buffalo and kind of gets trapped half in this morph, becomes kind of humanish. It's very gross and grotesque. And then they just kill the half buffalo, half human guy. It's not great. Here.
So it's The Fly.
There's one book that basically is The Fly. Yeah. Yes. Yes, that does happen.
I was trying to think of like The Fly, but like that's not really like what happens at the end of The Fly, like the mercy killing. And then I was like, what stories have mercy killings? And then I went, you know, the most famous one, Of Mice and Men, which in the Animorphs world would seem to be that someone has horrifically fused with a mouse in some sort of meat travesty.
Yeah, yes, this does happen. An ant also accidentally gets the power to morph and becomes kind of a half ant, half Cassie. She's one of the Animorphs, and then they have to kill that, too. It's just a lot of killing.
Why is this a recurring plot point? I'm worried.
Yeah, that's recurring.
The writers were literally like, we're stuck for a plot beat. And then they'll look at each other and go, terrifying flesh monstrosity? And the other one will go, yeah, terrifying flesh monstrosity. And then they just go for lunch. That's it. Done.
I was just going to say, there's one book where the entire plot is that one of the big bad entities has put together an army of, like, insanely powerful killing aliens. And then at the end, they find out that the killing aliens are just children and they think they're playing. Like, it's messed up. It's extremely messed up. This entire series is so messed up.
More
child soldiers.
But this time they're doing Ender's Game.
Exactly.
It's like, I'm concerned. Then,
like, when did Ender's Game come out? Just out of curiosity. Sorry, go ahead there, Ali. Well, I Googled this.
I was saying I'm concerned, but given what I remember from the Gone series and how dark that got very quickly, like the part when they have to cut off that guy's arm, like, I'm kind of not surprised.
No.
The two things I remember from the Gone series were there's the guy who has the concrete powers, who like traps people's hands in concrete so they can't use their powers, and then they break them open and their hands are all, you know, like when you get your cast off and your arm is like really shriveled because it hasn't seen the light and stuff. That, and also then in, is it Hunger, the second book, where they're like trying to defend the school from some big attack or whatever. I don't really remember. It's been years since I read the series. But, like, they go in and someone has set up a bunch of, like, really fine steel wire so the breeze, if she were to run through the corridor, would just get like chopped up.
I remember this, like, just reading and being like, I'm 12.
There is a plot point in one of the books where one of the main characters, one of the teenagers, does beat another living creature to death with her own bird arm. That does happen. In case you were interested in that particular plot point.
This is yet another reason for us to get Mr. Grant onto the show. Because there's a growing trend of in episodes where we invite a guest on, and then there'll just be a moment where I will go, why did you do that? Why did you write that thing? It's happened like at least 3 times to my memory now. You know, like, why did you hurt me with the thing you wrote?
I do want to take the opportunity to have the platform to complain specifically about the 2021 vintage box set that was released. In a collectible kind of tin lunchbox sort of format. And I did buy it because, of course, I did. It's another type of book. I need to have it. But they advertised it as the first 6 books with the original cover art. And it is not the original cover art.
So what is it?
I think they're contrasting it. In 2011, they released the first 7 books with these designed like lenticular holographic. And then in 2012, they reprinted without the holographic element. So it's not that. It is similar to the first print, but it's the second run of the first print. It is not the white background logo. It is the metallic background logo, which is the second version of those books that they printed in North America. So in fact, it is not the original cover art. It's the second iteration. And on top of that, when they did reissue those first 7 books in 2011, they updated some of the text. 1, to fix a giant plot hole that they left in book 1, and then 2, to kind of update some of the references, because at that point they were quite dated, and it's using that text. So it's actually the second print with the third print text. Nothing original about the book vintage box set. But they are different from any of the other North American prints, so I own them and I appreciate them. That is my gripe that I must convey.
I do remember those lenticular covers. Like, I've never owned an Animorphs book, but I've definitely like seen them in, you know, used bookshops and stuff, book fairs and things like that. They're pretty cool. But I'm now sort of imagining like that they're just using that weird like phone tree fill-in voice when there's like an option that they needed to record separate dialogue. And so someone will have like ADR'd the word in to update the reference. So it's the normal sentence. And instead of saying Walkman, it's like, you know, give me the name of an Animorph character, please.
Marco.
Marco, press play on his Spotify.
Yeah, it's basically that. I'm
turned into a boar.
Yeah, it's they're very minor differences, but yeah, they exist. And then of course they did it to retroactively fix a plot hole, which are lovingly referred to as KASUs, which stands for Catherine Applegate Screw Ups. And she gave them that term, actually. That's her own term, but a couple of plot holes throughout the series that I think some of them were retroactively fixed.
What was this one that they fixed?
This was the most egregious one. So in book 1, this is the plot hole that they created, is that if you're not in morph, you can use thought speak. So when the kids or the aliens are in morph, they can kind of send each other psychic message. They can telepathically speak to each other. And it's just like they hear it in their
Professor
minds.
You can either, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you can either broadcast that, so it's like yelling, or you can direct it to one person or two people. It's like DMing, basically, but with your brain. In one,
telling or DMing, the two like the two forms of communication.
The two types of communication.
I'm imagining that they've updated these things to include references to Discord.
I mean, maybe in book 16, it was about basically a billionaire internet guy. And there are some logs of like chat room conversations, which are very funny to read now in 2020. So you might get some Discord inserted in there.
It's always so funny to read or like see or what like consume, whatever the media is, what older people thought the internet was or communication was at that time, because it's always so funny at the time when they get it really wrong, but then like after the fact, like when you watch the third Johnny English film and you're like, that's not how the internet works at all.
Emma I would
Thompson,
say that
no, you are the prime minister. That's not how the internet works.
This is kind of opposite, because if you go back and read these, there's a plot point where people, and it's later in the series, people are starting to figure this out, or they have a suspicion. Basically, they're conspiracy theories, but they're right about the fact that there's an alien invasion happening, and it prints off some chat logs where people are talking about, you know, I saw this, I have this evidence, I'm an ex-alien controller. And it reads exactly like something that you would read like a on 4chan. Like it's funny. It's perfect. They got it. It nailed it. It's still relevant today.
Okay. But anyway, sorry, to return to this plot hole.
The plot hole, yeah. So the plot hole in book one is that Tobias and Jake, who are two of the teenagers, they're the first ones that kind of morph, try out the morphing technology. And in this scene, Jake is able to communicate with Tobias while one of them is in morph and one of them is not in morph. So as a human, he can do the thought speak. That is not how it works. And in the other books, it's made clear that if you're not in morph, you cannot do thought speak. So they went back and they reworked that whole section limited book one. This is weird, very weird plot hole. There's some other plot holes around birds that are native to the Andalite Blight planet. They're probably less interesting, but there are a few throughout the series.
That is an interesting thing for books now, because obviously like we're in the middle of an ongoing conversation over whether it's right to go back and change and update Roald Dahl's works, which I'm not going to get into because that's a whole other conversation which could last an hour. But it's interesting that what they've done is in the case of Animorphs is that they've reissued the text to correct things, which I've seen done in like audio drama and stuff. I've never seen done in film, and I've basically never seen it done in books. But also what I find is really interesting is that they've updated the references. Which I don't know why, like the fact that they've decided that this is something they need to do to like what perhaps stay relevant to readers. Like, is Animorph still as big now?
There is a large Animorphs fandom, and I think it's growing because there are new Animorphs books coming out. They are not new stories, but Kristen is an illustrator. He was recruited to re-release the Animorphs books in graphic novel form, which is really cool. So the first three are out. I have those, of course. I think that number four is coming out. I think you might just be wrapping up number four, but yeah, and they're kind of timeless. Like they do have a bit of a 90s look and feel, but they're not specifically 90s. And they're just really cool. And I think that it's introducing a whole new generation of readers to Animorphs. So certainly interest is rising in Animorphs again. Yeah, I think that I'm trying to remember the exact references. It was funny because it was only, less than a decade. It was 96 to 20 when they reissued these. So it's not like their readers would have drastically changed. They changed it like, I think they removed reference to Baywatch. They removed a reference to King Friday. I think they removed a reference to Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is weird because, like, it's not like he went away.
He's still here.
Yeah. Oh, and they removed a reference to a Sega gaming console, and they just made it like a generic, non-branded one.
Hmm.
Minor tweaks that I don't think were really necessary. To captivate a new audience, certainly closing that giant plot hole. A good move because, you know, it's you just can't really have that staying open. It's such a huge mechanism of the plot going on that humans can't do this thought speak thing.
Yeah.
Do you think this will be something that they'll continue doing? Not the updating, but like putting out Animorphs in graphic novels for all 64 of the books, or even potentially writing new stories if there's enough interest. Like, where do you see Animorphs as a franchise going forward?
I know that Grine, I believe he's contracted to illustrate the first six Animorphs books. I'm guessing that, you know, that's their kind of test run. If the sales are good, they will continue. It's taking longer, obviously, to illustrate each graphic novel than it took to write them with a team of ghostwriters. He's putting them out at a rate of about one per year, which is still very impressive. If you're gonna put all of them out, it's fairly obvious that they'll have to recruit more illustrators. So I don't know if that's really going to happen, although I certainly hope it does. In terms of new Animorphs stories, I won't spoil of the series. It's really very good. Very good. Comes very, very kind of really gripping. The way that it is pissed off some people. I thought it was perfect. And it doesn't really leave it. It kind of leaves it all the way open to new stories, and none of the way open to new stories. So that's really all I'll say about that. But the one potential new story that could be told is something that's really pissing off a lot of people in the Animorphs fandom. So there's an independent film studio, I forget their name, Picture Start maybe, and they acquired, that's funny, that's what happens when you get the animal DNA. They got the rights to Animorphs to do a movie. And initially Michael Grant and Catherine Applegate get involved, and then Michael Grant tweeted we're parting ways because of like creative differences, which is never a good sign. And now the rumor is that they're going to redo it as like the Animorphs are adults and it's a comedy. And there is nothing like that is about as contrary to the spirit of the IP that you could possibly get. Like, it's just an incredibly messed up thing to do. So if there is a new Animorph story, it'll be that and it'll be terrible.
Mm.
Awful. I need to do it as an anime and stop playing around.
Honestly, yeah. Just from what I know about it.
That physically hurt me to hear the words Animorph anime.
Animorph anime.
Did you not mention at the start that there was some sort of animation or something before?
There was a TV show. It was very bad. Nickelodeon did that, and it was incredibly bad. In a way where you watch it now and you either have like nostalgic, loving feelings for it, or you just cringe as hard as you did back when it first came out. For me, it's about half and half. I own both seasons. So there was that. Of it was bad. But you gotta have it. There were some video games, but yeah, other than it's adapted beyond that, apart from the graphic novel out now.
So it's like the books are kind of where it's at, like.
Yeah. I'm going to get into it, definitely. Just go the route of reading the books. Don't watch the show. Don't do it. It will only hurt you psychically and emotionally. You gotta read the books. And if you don't want to read the books for whatever reason and you prefer graphic novels, I can't recommend those enough as well. Chris Grine is great. And he's done a really great job of bringing those to life in graphic novel format.
Very good. This might be the call to arms for a lot of people to start reading or perhaps rereading the Animorphs series. I know there was a lot of like response to the Warrior Cats episode with people being like, "Well, Warrior Cats, I remember that," and like even speaking to people in person, you know, being like, "Hey, Warrior Cats, that was like an insane series, and now I'm rereading them."
It's definitely worth the time investment, I think, to read the series. I reread it every couple of years. So I've read all of the books, like, probably 6 to 10 times each. And yeah.
How long is the average Animorph book?
I can tell you it's about 90 minutes to read. I'm a very fast reader, but they're not very long. Let me grab one. You'll hear me move away from the mic and then come back. About 120 to 150 pages for the main series books.
Oh, yeah, that isn't too bad.
Yeah.
If you're looking to get out of a reading slump, folks, try Animorphs.
Yeah. That's the way to do it, for sure. Well, yeah. Good luck getting the books in the upper numbers, because they are very difficult to find if you don't have them already.
It's making me want to start reading them now and also reread the Gone series, which, like, because I had all the books, and I want to...
We're going to have to now. We're going to have to. You and I are both going to have to.
Yeah, we have to. But, like, I had all the books. Then, like, when I was around 17 or something, I was doing, like, cleared of my stuff. And, like, I was doing, and then, like, I gave my Gone books away like a fool. Like, I have no idea why I did it to this day. Like, I was, like, something was not going right. Like, I don't know why. But, like, but yeah, no, I'm going to have to get my hands on them again and read them again and read Animorphs.
Well, if you'd like to read Animorphs, I have all of the books in PDF format. Normally, I would not give away Pirate P, but the authors of Animorphs themselves have actually endorsed sharing of the PDFs because the books are no longer in print. Now, whether or not their outlook on that is changing because they are re-releasing them in graphic novel format, I do not know, but in the past, they have actually encouraged people to share the PDFs. So I do have those. Happy to share those with you. And it's all 64 books, so... Would be a good time. But also,
like at the rate that they're currently adapting them into graphic novels, like those upper numbers, it's gonna take like half a century to get.
I will barely be clinging to life when the last one comes out.
God, I hope someone puts me down like a dog with rabies before then.
I'll never find out how the series ends. You'll never get war crimes.
Cling on, like, you know, like, to find out how Animorphs ends.
And then you can die.
I feel like that might be a good place to wrap it up, unless you have anything else?
No, I mean, I've covered a lot of the subtle differences between different prints of the books. I could go on for another 2 to 3 hours about all of that, but I think that probably people are more interested in the morphing and the aliens and the murder, which I think we've done a good job of talking about, and I appreciate the opportunity to do so.
Awesome. Floyd, where can we find you on social media? Is there anything you want to plug, anything you want to share?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, at LiveActionFloyd. Feel free to tweet at me if you want those PDFs. I will share them. But yeah, I mostly tweet Animorphs and parenting content. So if you have any interest in either of those things or the intersection of both of them, join me on Twitter at LiveActionFloyd.
Awesome. Nigel, where can we find you?
You can mainly find me on Twitter at SpicyNigel, where recently, I don't know, I've been tweeting a lot about Among the Stacks, which when this episode goes out, we're going to currently be fundraising. We're recording this in advance, so I don't know how well that's doing. Hopefully well. But in terms of unique and original tweets, I'm currently putting out one right now, which says, I heard rumors about a Clearwater revival, but I didn't give them much credence.
You can find me on Twitter at AliCat_Ali, spelt like alleyway, cat spelt with a K, and you can find me on Instagram at Ally_K_Keegan. You can find the podcast at HyperFixationsP on Twitter.
Or at HyperFixationsPod on Instagram. Rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Chained in Your Cellar. Like, that was a weird part of the Goonies movie, wasn't it, guys? Why do we just gloss over that? If you would like to come on to the show to discuss one of your hyperfixations, please feel free to reach out at any of the aforementioned social media. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you didn't, nobody likes a fucking narc.
And that is all for this week. Floyd, it was a pleasure to have you on. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Signing off.